So, Berto, on this warm summer evening, I thought I'd kick back with my best friend, you, by the way, and answer some questions from the listeners, and we just have a relaxing time. What do you say, Berto?
Let's relax. Let's kick it back.
This is the Psychology in Seattle podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kirk Honda. I'm a therapist, and I'm also a professor.
My name is Humberto Castañeda, and I tune out-of-tune banjos.
Anonymous upper tier patron says, is it okay to fantasize about other people in a relationship when you're in a relationship? I am very happy in a long-term, stable, healthy, loving relationship. We have been together 4 years and I am so happy with him. I'm a heterosexual girl in a relationship with a guy. Lately, I've had shifts in my libido where I feel like it has skyrocketed from where it was over the past few years. What is throwing me off so much is that I started having these strange, random, overly sexual urges towards other men, including a close friend of my partner. I don't know what this means exactly and am feeling confused. I would never cheat on my partner, and my love and attraction to him has never dwindled, but I can't seem to shake this urge to be with others sexually. Is this normal? I don't think I'm polyamorous, and I don't know what's going on. I was hoping you could shed some light if you've ever heard of this before or help me to not feel so abnormal. Berto, what do you think?
Ha, that's my story. That's my life story. So look, obviously this is not the same for everyone. People vary dramatically. In my case, yeah, I feel attraction constantly to, you know, women. And what I have found for myself is that the key is not letting your thoughts get obsessive. I think that's true with so many things, not just this topic, but in general, a lot of things are, I feel okay to think about, to maybe even dream about a bit. I have found, just from personal experience, that when I start obsessing about things, even sometimes things that seem innocuous or like not harmful, it tends to lead to problems. As an example of one of those, you know, I've talked about my addictions in the past with shopping and compulsions like that. But, you know, I've had some of that I remember, for example, when I was buying a lot of music equipment, I would go online and like look at this one piece of equipment all the time and being like, oh, I really want it. And I'm like, oh, I shouldn't buy it. It's so expensive. But then I keep looking at it online and like drooling and rereading all the little specs and things. And I think back to that and I'm like, well, I think that that impulse of like, oh, I better check in on this again. I wasn't monitoring, or I wasn't kind of checking back in with myself and asking like, what is driving this? What do you think this will do for you? Like, what is this?
Well, have you ever had problems with sexual obsession?
Absolutely. Like, that's the story of my young life, basically. I literally remember feeling at various times when I was younger that that's all I could think of. Like, I'd be in a class at high school, certainly in college. I'd be in college in a class, and there's a girl in the class, and she's attractive. I find her attractive. The whole class, that's all I'm thinking about, constantly. I don't do anything about it. I'm obsessing about it. I'm not paying attention. That's all I'm thinking about it. And it was like, it would take over my brain and not let go. So, you know, again, thinking back and looking back, I wish I'd had tools to talk myself away from the obsession. Be like, yeah, acknowledge, like, oh, that's a very attractive person. And they even have like little questionnaires for myself, like, are you going to do something about it? Do you want to talk to her? Are you going to meet her? Or do you just want to acknowledge this? Because right now you're not paying attention. Are you interested in dropping this class? You know, like these kind of conversations, because it could get away from me. Mm-hmm. So what I would say is, in general, my perspective is fantasizing is okay. And maybe this is wrong boundary wise, but even fantasizing about someone you might know might be okay. It might be inevitable. Let's put it that way. But if you start noticing that you don't have control over it, and that it actually starts taking over whether you want to or not,
harming your life, somehow.
Harming you, because that's, you kind of get obsessed, then you start maybe even planning like, well, how could I make this a reality? And what we're talking about could have harm, because you haven't ended your current relationship or what have you. That other person might be in their own relationship. I think that's where you need to have self conversations, maybe go to therapy, maybe do some other things to try to mediate.
Yeah, what I'll say is that it's totally normal to fantasize about other people. You're talking about an increase in libido recently, which is also common to people. It's not unusual for various reasons. People don't talk about this. It's not very rom-com-y to talk about how people fantasize about other people. It's also threatening to think about, wait, does my partner think about other people?
Right.
Berto, percentage-wise, what percentage of people think about other people while they're having sex with their partner?
I don't know. I'm going to be optimistic and say 50%.
And women or men do it more?
Well, do you mean like always or have they at all?
Well,
if they have it all, like, yeah, 90%.
they on a kind of semi-regular basis.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm going to go 50.
And men or women do it more?
50-50.
Okay. They're very close, and you're very close. It's about 50. It's more like 45 or something.
Okay.
And, of course, it's self-report.
Yeah.
And what do you define as, like, on a regular basis?
Sure.
But women actually more often than
men.
Oh,
more often. Okay.
Slightly more, yeah. But, yeah, it's extremely normal. You could, as a shortcut to the statistics, just say that about half of everyone, regardless of gender, think about other people while they're having sex. It's totally normal. It's totally common. Well, why do you think people do that, Berto?
Okay, so there is the aspect of novelty. There is the aspect
that turns people on.
That can turn people off. There's the aspect of experience that you want to have. Like, why do people watch TV, watch movies, read books? It's because you want to have experiences. And by having a fantasy, your brain can help you have a made-up experience. But it's like virtual reality because you are having sex. Just your brain is kind of like modifying the parameters.
Right.
Then it also might be because they're dissatisfied with the relationship. They might be upset. They might actually want to get out of it. They might legitimately be in love with someone else, you know.
Yeah.
Range of things.
Yeah, I would say in the functional realm, which it sounds like anonymous upper tier patron is in, she's saying, I love my partner and I don't know why these ideas are popping in my head. I would say that it has to do with novelty. There seems to be, for most humans, a attraction sexually to novel experiences. But as we navigate all the needs and the parameters of our life, we tend not to like novel sexual experiences because they often result in not having long-term attachments.
Yeah.
So when we're trying to meet all of our needs, a lot of us will choose long-term attachment and monogamy or even polyamory with a few people than to have a different sexual partner every single night.
Right.
And the sublimation is to fantasize about it or pornography or something like that. So, it doesn't mean that your relationship is bad. It doesn't mean that you're even poly. Even if you were poly, I'm guessing you would still potentially fantasize about other people because polyamory means you're with, say, you know, 1 to 4 people on a regular basis. You probably still would fantasize about others.
Right.
It's a debatable thing because if we discussed it in a different gendered situation, like Berto, say you're in a long-term relationship,
yep,
and you are fantasizing about your partner's best friend.
Right.
And you know this person. You hang out with this person. This is a friend of yours, someone that you hang. Ethically speaking, so let's say you masturbate when you're having sex with your partner.
Like it's like a lot. Like it's in my mind constantly.
Yeah, maybe even just temporarily. Like
yes.
for a month. It's a frequent go-to
right.
fantasy. Is that okay?
Okay, so you ask me now, at this point in time in my life, I'd say I would definitely intervene with myself at this point because I feel like I'm crossing a boundary, even though it seems like it's all behind
closed doors. What boundary are you crossing?
Well, it's because of so much of my mind is being spent on I'm not going to be as present with my partner. I find it a little, maybe a little disrespectful.
Right.
To not like try to address myself about it, you know?
Disrespectful
to my partner, like, and to her friend, to say, well, look, you know, again, it's inevitable, or it might be inevitable, but I'm but letting Birdo, it run amok.
But Birdo is just in your mind.
I know, but, you know.
You and I have had this argument before.
Well, about which parts?
Well, you were on the other side of this debate. You'd be like, dude, it's in my mind. You can't police my mind.
And now I know what you're talking about. I do think that there's a point at which it thoughts coming into your mind, you might not have as much control over. But what happens once the thought comes into your mind, and then what you do,
totally.
You do have some control over it.
Absolutely.
And certainly if we were talking about like, oh, lately I've been fantasizing about killing this one dude. A lot. Like every night before I go to sleep, I dream about it. I draw pictures about it. I would want to like intervene, you know, like,
yeah.
And this isn't that extreme, but it is conducive to potentially bad things. And
I think there's a viable debate on one hand, and that's why I reversed the genders, because it's, I think, harder for us to imagine culturally, even though it's silly for us to have this double standard, where women could, a wife, heterosexual wife, could fantasize about her husband's best friend, but and have that be quaint and cute and whatever.
Yep.
But when we reverse the genders, it feels more creepy.
Yep.
And I don't think that double standard should apply. I mean, of course, context matters, and more sexual assaults happen from men, vast majority. So there's that. But anyway, my point is that I think it's a gray zone. On one hand, it absolutely could bother your partner's friend.
Yeah.
Your partner's friend, if they found out, could say, I don't think I can be friends with you anymore.
Yeah.
You were doing that on purpose?
Yeah.
I feel violated. You know, you were doing stuff to me and my body that I didn't want you to do, and you were doing it in your mind. Like that really scares me or hurts me, or I feel violated or something. And no, I don't like it. And of course, if your partner found out, it's like, wait, you know, you can fantasize about some famous person or just a nameless, you know, figure, but to fantasize about my best friend, like, why her? Why was something wrong with me? This kind of thing. So, but then we look at the stats, and half of everyone fantasizes, and I'm guessing a good percentage of those people will fantasize about people that they know in their lives.
Well, and again, I do want to clarify that there is a difference between, like, you're just there and a thought pops into your head, you know, because you don't have control of your active mind all the time, or
on the initial half second, but everything beyond that point, you do.
Well,
have
that's the thing, but I'm saying like. For example, I'm a very visual person, right? So if I go to the beach with someone I know and they're wearing a bikini and it looks attractive, before I know it, my mind is going to be like, whoa, attractive female in bikini.
Sure.
Okay. Now, if at that point I start like obsessing about it and ogling and like kind of start thinking things, okay, now I'm in control. Now I should have control, and I'm choosing not to intervene, right? So that's kind of the difference. It's like there's things that happen in your brain before you're even able to do anything about it. And then there's what you do after that. Now, what I'm thinking is that if you want to be healthy for yourself, even if you're just selfishly trying to be healthy in your brain, is you want to curb things from getting too far. Like just come on, don't obsess about this.
Yeah, and
like,
that's fine.
Pull this back.
And that's a good angle, the self-preservation or the... Yeah. Avoidance of what I'm thinking you're getting to is if you obsess, you might actually try to put it into action, which could ruin your relationship.
And even if you don't literally do like, hey, I want to have sex with you or something, it could affect how you interact
with your partner.
With your partner, with the other person. Right. It could make things oddly odd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what I'm pointing out is even, it's an interesting question of if the best friend never finds out, no one ever finds out, you don't tell anyone that that's the person you fantasize about on the reg, is that harmful to that person? Even, you know, they never find out, they never know about it, you never reveal it, it doesn't affect your relationship with your partner, it doesn't negatively affect your relationship with that friend. You don't sexualize that friend when you're with them, say. Yep. You manage to keep it completely relegated to a particular point in time, and it doesn't confuse you at all.
Right.
is that morally or ethically wrong? And on one hand, it's like, well, a lot of people do that.
Yeah.
Or even just you say once,
yeah.
like just, you just fantasize about that person one time.
Yep.
Or a coworker of yours, like someone you work with, or an employee of yours. Put it in that angle of yep. like, you fantasize about an employee once and it doesn't affect your life. It probably would, but let's say it doesn't. Is that a violation? You know, I think on one hand it is, absolutely, because if the person found out about it, they'd say like, you non-consensually fantasized about me and I don't like that. I don't like you did things to me in your head. You know, I don't like that. It doesn't feel good. On the other hand, can't people fantasize? And so common to
right.
do that?
Right. Now, okay, like for example, let's carve one part off. If you dreamed that, now you can still do things the next day to try to steer yourself away to having more of those dreams. But if you had a dream, that's a little different because yeah. you were asleep. Things happen in your brain. Now you might yeah. wake up and be like, oh, that was interesting. Okay. But now when you're awake and you're like, okay, I'm going to actively put these thoughts in my head and encourage them and reinforce them. Look, if it was the one time and then you had this conversation with yourself and you're like, yeah, that was not, let's not speak again about it again, I guess. But if it becomes a recurring thing, yeah,
like,
I think it's a problem.
All the people who have fantasized about Brad Pitt or who whatever famous person, is that a violation? Now, for some, you know, maybe what we need is some sort of database where people say, look, if you want to fantasize about me,
it's
go,
okay.
I consent.
Yeah, like for me, I would consent.
you know? But maybe other people, they wouldn't. So you'd have to look it up before you did it.
So, oh man, you just shot down the idea. I was going to start a company where I'm like the person you can come to exercise your fantasies. I'll wear any mask you want. You know, and I'll put on a voice like whoever you want me to talk to.
Wait, who's that voice?
I don't know. I'm a terrible impersonator, but I'll do it. And then you can have all your fantasies and I don't mind. But then you just made a point that it might be unethical, so I don't know.
So I got a gripe of wrath, Berto.
Uh-oh.
So my wife, Stacy, is driving somewhere, Whole Foods, I believe, and she's going up north, mm-hmm. going away from Seattle. It's outside Seattle. And she comes back home and she tells me about how there's this truck in front of her that was pumping out just billows of black smoke.
Whoa.
Have you seen this before?
Yeah. Oh, I hate it. It's like, I mean, when that happens and you're stuck, especially behind it, oh.
Yeah, but what you're referring to are things that I think I've seen where it's just like an old car.
No, I've seen the truck. I've seen the truck too. Like, it's just like a plume of black.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So Stacy tells me about this and she's like, yeah, this car was just a complete douchebag. The guy was putting out all this black smoke, and then he was really impatient, and he tried to go into the oncoming traffic because he wanted to get to the intersection and turn left, and then he swerved back in and he actually hit a car.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and all this black smoke was coming into her car, and I'm thinking, she's like, have you heard of that? And I'm thinking, well, I know about some old cars that will put out a lot of particulates because they don't have a good filter system or a catalytic converter or whatever it is that gets rid of all that mm-hmm. soot. And but the way she was describing it, I just thought, this sounds more. She's like,
yeah.
She's like, no, this is a new truck. And I'm like, huh?
Yeah.
So I Google it and there's this movement called coal rollers.
What?
Or rolling with coal or rolling coal. Yeah, they call them, you know, let's go roll some coal. And they call them coal rollers.
They do this on purpose?
Yes. They put out enormous amounts of pollution.
Yeah.
It's soot.
Yeah.
They modify their automobiles.
No.
Such that it spews pollution, black pollution into the air.
Oh my God.
Berto, can you imagine as to why someone would do that?
Well, first of all, is that legal? That doesn't seem like it would be legal.
So it's not legal, but A lot of people have cars that are modified in illegal ways.
Okay. I could imagine someone
and they just get the occasional ticket, you know what I mean? Or they have a flip, they have a switch that they turn on when they don't see any cops around, this kind of thing.
So someone who is very entitled, like a narcissist or a psychopath, just doesn't care about society.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, I don't care. It's my car.
Maybe, but according to the news reports, these individuals are part of a movement that hate environmentalists.
Oh, boy. Okay. So they're just like sticking it to the old planet.
I have never had a bigger gripe of wrath than I have had about this. Thinking about my wife breathing in purposeful pollution from a douchebag car in front of her that is purposely billowing out pollution and soot and particulates from their car exhaust into the air, in traffic, into other people's cars, into other people's breathing space and visual space for that matter, and probably getting soot on everything.
Yeah.
Because that stuff that's in the smoke, it lands.
So I've been behind a truck before that was billowing smoke. Like it looked black. It's like a black column.
Yeah.
I assumed, and this wasn't recent, it was like a couple of years ago or something. I assumed there was something wrong with the truck.
Right. Probably not. Unless, I mean, if it was a really old truck.
I mean, it didn't. It was like a Mack truck type thing, you know?
Well, I don't know. I'd have to see it. But was it like black?
Black.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, because I also know what you're talking about, where the car is spewing a lot of, you know.
Or a semi.
No, this was black.
Yeah. Like a semi sometimes will be kind of dirty running.
Like, and I had seen that growing up in Colombia, because I don't know if they use really dirty fuel or what the hell. But like buses, some buses would spew out pretty dark material into the air, right?
Yeah.
But it wasn't on purpose.
When our planet is on the downslide,
you mean like now or worse?
When the seas have displaced 2 billion people on the planet and our economy is tanking and everyone is looking around going like, how did we get here? That is going to be the poster child.
They'll still feel entitled then. They will feel entitled to the first relief, the first of, you know.
I mean,
entitled
it's one
is,
thing.
Entitled
it's one
does.
Thing. Okay, racism is one thing, right? Like racism.
Yeah, that's fine.
No, it's awful. But, I always think, well, the arc of history is long, but it bends towards justice.
Yeah.
And eventually we'll get there. But with environmentalism, we're on a ticking time bomb.
Yeah.
And for these idiots, and I blame the echo chamber. I blame the politicians who brainwash these people. Because, you know, these people, they must just be nimwits. Like, the inability to comprehend. I mean, at the very least, you would say, well, that black smoke is going to harm other people. They have to breathe that in.
Yeah.
Or I have to breathe that in.
Right.
You know, it's one thing to have a banner and walk around that says environmentalists are stupid. It's another thing to be actively pumping out soot.
Yeah, I've never understood that extreme position. Oh, I mean, I do understand it from the perspective of that we have been manipulated for decades. But the natural position wouldn't make sense because, let's say you don't believe in science. Fair enough. Sad, but let's say.
You don't believe in empirical observation. Yeah,
you're posting on Facebook on the internet about how you don't believe in science. Fine.
Yeah, you don't
on
believe
your
in,
cell phone.
You don't believe in observing how the natural world
Fair
works
enough.
And documenting the natural world works.
I hear you. But the thing that's always blown me away is like, what about old school? I'm talking about like rewind the clock 2,000 years, 5,000 years, but maybe 200 years. What about old school? Like, hey, let's take care of our own city or something. Like, let's take care of our own street. Like good old American pride in our own stuff.
Yeah.
How come that's not there?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if I've said this on the podcast, but when the pandemic began, I was thankful that our politicians, there's a little window there, that I was thankful that this wasn't really a partisan issue, the issue of vaccines or the issue of...
For one day, it wasn't.
Yeah, it was a very short amount of time. But I remember thinking, well, thank God that we are heading into this pandemic, into this virus situation, and Republicans and Democrats don't differ on this issue. If anything, Democrats were a little bit more anti-vax on average, but most people are scared of a virus. Most people are fine with a vaccine. So I thought, and most people are recognizing the fact that you can get sick because everyone has gotten the flu, everyone's gotten cold, everyone has been sick before. This doesn't have anything to do with partisan politics. This will be wonderful. This is going to be great. You know, I felt a similar thing when 9/11 happened. Was the silver lining afterwards? I was thinking, well, this was New York, so this is like a Democrat zone.
Yeah,
and Republicans don't like America. Right. So we're going to be together.
Now
on
we
this.
Can lie together to the UN and then go and together invade Iraq.
Right, that kind of thing. You know, it just boggles me that our politicians don't just get together in a room and say, look, let's not make
let's
this
not
into a
pick
part.
And argue about who killed who.
Let's just do the right thing. How about we just all, let's just for this one time, because there's going to be millions dead. So just this one time, let's just make an agreement. We're all on the same page. Don't put anyone, you can put me down on my tax voting or my big government, but we can all agree that this virus is killing people, and we can all just be on the same page. Why?
Nope.
Because if we make it a partisan issue, then it will grind our system to a halt. So, and yet they did. They made it into a partisan issue, and now it's hard to imagine it not being a partisan issue because it is now essentially been injected into the DNA of Democrats and Republicans, certain ideas about the virus and the pandemic and the vaccine.
Yeah.
And the same goes for environmentalism.
Yeah.
It's like, can't we all just agree that we all want the planet to survive? And why is that a partisan issue?
Because you're a hippie.
It just boggles the brain. Or on the flip side, can't we all agree that we should take care of our people when we displace the workers as a result of environmental policy?
Right.
You know, can't we as a society say, well, if as a government we're going to change every energy policy, we have to make sure we allocate taxes.
Yeah. So no more coal mining, but all these people will have a place in society.
And very secure, you know, like they won't have to turn to meth to make the days feel a little bit less bleak, you know, that kind of thing. Anyway, let's take a break and reset because I'm going to get real upset in a second. What do you say, Bruno?
Let's do it.
Hey, deserving listeners. As you all know, I am constantly recommending that people go to therapy. We all need therapy from time to time. Well, one of the options available that is definitely worth checking out is BetterHelp. If you're looking for a therapist, I would give it a try by going to betterhelp.com/Kirk. Make sure you use the promo code Kirk because you get 10% off your first month, and it really helps us out. As you watch these videos, I know many of you have been motivated to find your own therapist, which is great because you deserve it. And I know also that it can be hard to find a good fit, find the right one for you. Well, one of the options available in terms of your shopping is to go to betterhelp.com/Kirk. I've been told you can start communicating with your therapist in under 24 hours. You can message your counselor at any time. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions. I've also been told that it's often less expensive than in-person therapy, and you should know that this service is available to clients worldwide. So go to betterhelp.com/Kirk to get 10% off your first month today.
All right, we are back from the break. We're asking that everyone become annual patrons instead of monthly patrons. You know, when you sign up on Patreon, you can sign up monthly or annual. We added the annual, or Patreon actually added the annual. And if you turn it into an annual, you get a discount, pretty sizable discount.
Cool.
And so that's a win to you as patron, but it also is a win for us because it helps us to plan for the future. Because every month to month, there's like this whole kind of shuffling of patrons, and it's hard to know like where we stand month to month. So we're asking if you aren't a patron to become a patron, become an annual one. And if you are a monthly patron, switch to annual. You just go to your app, go to the different, where the tiers are, and there should be a little button where they show all the tiers that says like switch to annual or something like that. But yeah, do that now. And let's do an OPP, an old patron praise for those patrons who became patrons in December of 2017. And they've been patrons with us ever since. We have Mina from New York. We have Tasha, good old Tasha, who is an upper tier patron from Washington State.
Yay.
We have Liz from Indianapolis. We have Catherine from Florida. We have Ashley from God knows where. We have
God knows where.
Lara from Italy.
Oh.
I think we've communicated with Lara before. We have Taylor, who we met at one of our live events.
Yes, okay.
She's in the military, I believe, in North Carolina. We have Deanna from North Carolina. We have Hannah from Alaska. North Pole, Alaska.
What? There's a place called North Pole, Alaska.
Yeah. We have Paige, good old Paige, from MA. Is that Massachusetts? Probably.
Sounds like Massachusetts.
Good old Paige. And we have, well, wait, do I know Paige? Anyway, I think I do. We got Jill from Republic, Missouri. We had, which I think my great-great-grandfather lived in Republic for a while. We have Rupa, who I believe we've communicated with, from California.
Oh, hi, Rupa.
We have Adria from Delaware. We have Kelsey from San Francisco. We have we have Earth Monkey from Seattle.
Earth Monkey, I love it.
And we have good old TR from, who is an upper tier patron from Redmond, Washington.
Oh my gosh, that's right around the corner.
We've communicated with TR. So thank you all for being patrons and for patrons for this long. Listener Winona from Michigan asks, how do you repair family relationships after that were hurt by differences of COVID response? Oh, this is going to get me angry again. So how do you repair family relationships that were hurt by differences of COVID response? Brito, I think you know about this. But before answering that question, there's another question that's related to this, which is, well, answer that question, I guess.
Well, so to start with, I haven't felt the full ramification yet because some of this is right now living in Colombia. I have relatives in Colombia that are deniers while Colombia is being ravaged by COVID. A lot of people I know, including very close, including people you've met, are currently suffering with COVID. And it's very hard. A lot of friends of
friends.
Are
they in the hospital?
So one of them was.
Really?
Yes, hospitalized.
On a respirator? Respirator?
I don't know, but they were hospitalized. Yeah.
Being on a respirator terrifies me.
Oh, yeah.
Having that tube down into your lungs?
Yeah.
I mean,
No. It's crazy. So anyway, so the point is, while this is happening, I also have relatives that deny the whole thing. They do believe all the conspiracies, this, that, and the other thing.
What conspiracies?
That COVID's not, I don't know, because it's a combination of either COVID's not real or it is a Chinese virus by the military and or it is the vaccines are, you know, on purpose to control us and or the, pick your.
How are the vaccines controlling us?
The microchips, right?
They like, literally believe that.
Some people do, yeah. And anyway, so I have to reconcile when I go there, I will probably have some uncomfortable conversations. And it has created a schism between different parts of the family. As an example, I got a call 2 weeks ago from someone saying, hey, I believe such and such relative of ours has COVID, but they're refusing to go to the hospital. They insist it's just a cold. Well, I don't know what the truth is because that person indeed claimed it was just a cold. They seem to have gotten better, so I don't know. Maybe they did, but they were concerned because of the symptoms and the severity and the thing, and you know, it's these kinds of things. So I unfortunately that. And then here, closer to home, I have another relative that lives here in Washington that was very much believed in COVID, did all the steps to wear masks, stay at home, all of the above, but refuses to get a vaccine because they think it's a bad thing. They think it's controlling them. And all
like
that.
Bill Gates?
I don't know if that's part of it. Probably, yeah. Probably Bill Gates.
I mean, so of the conspiracy theories,
5G,
of the pseudoscience regarding vaccines, you know, there's a tier system of like viability.
Yeah.
It's slightly viable, although extremely not supported by observation. And I feel like we need to not say science because people are like, well,
science, you know, doesn't know everything.
We need to replace that with observation. When we actually look at the results of the vaccine, you know?
Okay, Kirk, before you, here's what we should do. We should propose a new thing. Say, you know, science sucks. Science doesn't know anything. We propose a new thing. What we're going to do is we're going to observe nature. We're just going to observe.
Yeah.
Write down what we observe. And then we'll make predictions based on what we've observed about what might happen.
Right.
As a result of what we've observed.
Right.
And, and we'll call it Jujubee.
Like, it's still completely absurd, but at least it's slightly viable that there could be, like, negative side effects from the vaccine, right?
Yeah, well, Johnson & Johnson had a little bit of an uptick for older women and the blah, blah, blah.
So, of the reasons why someone wouldn't take the vaccine, for that reason, I would still argue that it is, and all the experts would argue this as well, that it is... much more risky to not have the vaccine, and also against society because you're actually contributing to the passage of the virus, and we might have a pandemic literally for the rest of time because people refuse to get this vaccine, and the virus will get worse and worse and worse because of its ability to, you know, mutate.
Well, and us humans in general are terrible at numbers. So when they hear the false, but they'll hear 3,000 people have died because of the vaccine, you know, which by the way, is there's no proof of that. But let's say, they even if they took that 3,000, there's no comprehension of like, do you know what percentage that is of the number of people that have been vaccinated? And do you know how many died from COVID? Like, there's just no understanding. And by the way, the 3,000 number is not even something that's demonstrated, you know?
Right, yeah. So the, and people die all the time after all sorts of events, and we don't attribute it.
Including, you know, vaccines.
Yeah. People will have ice cream and die the next day. We don't say they died because of ice cream. It's just a coincidence that they happen to die anyway. So, so that would be at least slightly viable. But to say that it's mind control, I just find to be
so... Well, there's microchips in the fluid.
But I find it, of course, you know what I'm saying. Like, it's so... There's so many technological advances that would have to occur for that to happen, one.
But you
two,
don't know.
Why would they do that?
You don't know. These companies and the government, they have crazy technology you haven't heard of. And it makes you magnetic.
And of all the tech people, why Bill Gates?
Because he's the billionaire.
But he's the nicest one out of all of them.
The devil has the best smile.
Like, he's the one giving billions of dollars to save people all over the world.
No, he's doing billions of dollars to inject people around the world with his microchips.
But, like, why him? Why not Bezos or Tesla guy?
Bezos is going to be doing it now because every Amazon package, when you touch it, it's going to inject little microchips into your bloodstream.
And the other thing I say is, if you really believe that these people are out to get you and have the ability, you should give up, because if they can infect you by having you touch a package, then you're done.
I've tried this argument. Sadly, doesn't work. I've tried this argument before of like, listen.
Wait, you've had arguments with people with this?
Oh, yeah. But the more general thing that I've said is, listen, if in fact the cabals that you imagine have the kind of power, control, and planning capabilities that you ascribe to them, I actually kind of want them to be in charge, because that's amazing. Yeah. Because I have worked forever in very big organizations with very smart people that are like world-renowned experts in tuning banjos. And guess what? It doesn't work that way. People make mistakes all the time. Yeah. Banjos go back to their owners, and they sound like crap.
So what do you do, Berto? How do you resolve these problems when you visit your family?
Okay, I have had one... The closest I can come to a breakthrough. I won't be that far-fetched to call it a breakthrough, but almost a breakthrough. I had a 3-hour debate with one of these relatives here, and what I was trying to point, my only point was this, that the people that that this person imagines are the evil participants in all of this, they might be people just like me. And I was trying to explain, like, look, here's something you believe, they believe. Okay, well, I believe that. Do you want to know why I believe it? And I was explaining. And I say, like, I think you know that I'm not some evil minion or something. Right. But yet I do actually would vote that way. And here is why.
Right.
And I see both sides. I think this is...
Yeah, actually, I think that's good. I don't think it would convince people. But,
no, but it's I think the it only is, thing I could
but
find. But
I think it is good because that is, I think, a basis for why these things exist, is that they observe a population or a group of people that are voting or thinking in a way, and it confuses them. They don't know why, yeah. And it scares them. Yeah. And then these brainwashers swoop in and fill these people's minds with, well, here's why they're like that. Instead of actually getting out of your echo chamber and going over to these people and being like, wait, why do you want that? And once you hear why you want that, you'd be like, oh, I guess I get it. I don't agree with it, but I guess I get it. It doesn't have to have a magical element to the reason why you believe that.
It's similar to when, remember when Bernie was going around in his campaign, talking to people, actually talking to them, and people that were very conservative, and they would end up like agreeing with him on some things because he was just like, look, do you think this is right? And then be like, well, here's what I want to do. And it's like when you demystify it, like I guarantee you that not everyone, but a lot of the people that are like, this such and such is a devil, right? If they could be in a room with that devil for a couple hours having a conversation and get it all out and talk it through, many of them would be like, okay, well, I may still not like them, but they kind of seem like a person.
Regardless of which direction you go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, Winona, what I would say is I don't know the answer to this question because I don't know if we've ever lived in a time where there are so many mainstream conspiracy theories that are believed in that, or just weird theories and weird ideas that actually impact our lives. You know, it's one thing to believe in Loch Ness Monster or Bigfoot or their, you know, Area 51, but that doesn't impact your life. It doesn't.
Right.
COVID impacts all of our lives.
Yeah.
And for your family member who might even, and we'll get, well, let's get into each other. Listener Joey from Seattle says, how do I move on after my coworker possibly gave me COVID? My coworker had a positive COVID test taken 2 days after I worked a full shift with them. I have no idea if they were being reckless or if it was just a freak accident that they got COVID, but I can't help but to be mad that I might now have COVID because of them. How do I keep this from damaging my perception of this person who I don't yet know all too well and who I'll have to keep working with? Berto, what do you think?
Okay, so right when the pandemic started, about a month in, my neighbor and his whole family caught COVID. So I could have been really upset and judgmental. The catch is, he works at a restaurant and he had to work because he needed money. So he got COVID. Now, we were distancing from each other, so I didn't catch COVID. But there's a chance that I could have still accidentally caught it because, like, I mean, I do walk outside. I walk to get my mail, things like this.
But that's a different situation, Berto. I mean, this Joey is working in a I don't know if it was a restaurant, but I don't know where Joey works, but Joey's working in an environment where he has to work closely with other people.
Yeah.
And in that situation, you have you depend on your coworkers who you're working right next to be very careful so that they don't infect you.
But they work in a high risk, one of the most high risk. In fact, during the pandemic, the highest risk you could get COVID was at a restaurant.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, now, at this point in time, why are they not vaccinated? Did they still catch it? Which you can, in spite of being vaccinated. You know, it's kind of hard to know. But I will say that if this happened a while ago, I'd be more understanding. If it happened recently, I would definitely be upset myself.
Yeah. I don't know what to think. I think that, and I've answered this question in other ways, but I've gotten a lot of questions about essentially, this thing is happening and I'm having an emotion. I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And I think the first step is just to allow yourself to have that emotion.
Yeah.
For you, Joey, you're angry at your coworker for getting COVID and potentially getting you infected with it. because you've been working really hard to not get it. You've been working really hard at work to make sure you follow all the protocols. And if you get it from your, like, I have another friend who works in radio, and he went into a, actually, this is a friend of a friend, went into a record in the studio, in the, you know, the small radio recording studios. And one of the people in there the night before had been on like a party with everyone pre-vaccination and had gotten infected and then infected everyone in that recording booth.
Oh, man.
And, you know, you absolutely should be angry at that person. You should be like, you, fine, you went to a party. That's endangering everyone else in the world, but you should have recused yourself from sitting in a room with a bunch of other people because there was a chance that you were infected.
Yeah.
You could literally kill someone or cause someone to have ongoing brain damage or lung damage because you didn't think that that was a possibility when that's the whole point of this pandemic. So you have every right to get angry. Now, in your situation, Joey, you don't really know what happened. It could have been a freak accident. Maybe the coworker did everything possible and he still got infected. It's not usually the case. Or, as you're saying, Berto, he was forced into a situation where there wasn't anything he could do. He had to pay his bills.
Well, and let's keep in mind, and I don't mean to put this on Joey, but Joey is the name, right?
Yeah.
Joey caught COVID.
No, Joey didn't catch COVID. Joey wonders if Joey caught COVID.
Sorry, you're right. Joey might have caught COVID.
Yeah.
So someone else could wonder about Joey. Whoa, how did you catch COVID?
Right.
Right? So the thing is that...
Maybe not jump to conclusions.
Right. But yeah. But that person that caught COVID, they might have their own other person that they're like, oh, I wonder if I got it from this other person that wasn't being careful.
Yeah. You know? I suppose it's totally... If I were Joey and I was like really thinking about this, I would actually ask the coworker, oh, dude, you got COVID. Like, do you know how you got it? I'm curious because I'm trying to avoid getting it. And if the coworker says something like, I have no idea. I have been paranoid. I've been doing everything and I still got it. Then you can be like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
But if the coworker's like, oh, you know, I was at a party the other night. I probably got it from
And I haven't been vaccinated.
Or my partner, she was hanging out with all these other people the other day and she got it. And then I got it, of course.
Yeah, like, well, there's...
Then, yes, you have every right to get angry in that situation, 100%. Now, you're asking, Joey, how do I work next to this person if that is the case? I don't know. How do you work next to someone that is participating in...
Wait a minute. If they still have COVID, they shouldn't be at work, right?
Well, but after they recover and they come back.
Oh, well, then it's okay, right?
Well, but I don't know. To me, it's like a drunk driver. It's like finding out someone regularly drives drunk and managed to not kill anyone in that process.
Right.
But it kills people all the time.
Right.
And so if I knew of someone that was regularly driving drunk, I mean, they could kill someone I know. They could kill me. They could you know, kill other people with their reckless behavior. There's behavior that I think it's totally acceptable to me in my cultural pocket to be livid at those people.
Yeah, it's just that in this case, we don't know. We don't know.
Right, right. Yeah. Anonymous patron says, I'm wondering if you have any psychology tricks on dealing with COVID fatigue. I work in healthcare in Canada, and vaccination rates in Canada are behind the U.S., and variants are causing a lot of problems. So on one hand, I'm logically scared for what's to come and have a healthy respect for the virus because I work in healthcare. Emotionally, though, I feel done and over it, and like there's no point to try and keep fighting against a virus when people in my community won't even do the basics like sign up to get vaccinated. I'm worried that these feelings will cause me to get sloppy with PPE or infection prevention, which are obviously important for the safety of my patients, my coworkers, and my family at home. Do you have any psychological tricks to get back to the fighting COVID mindset and away from the ugh COVID mindset? Berto, what do you think?
Well, the only a couple things that come to mind. One is, I do think that the wrong cultural mindset can be permanently demoralizing and be counterproductive. For example, the war on drugs, the war on drugs, is a failure, massive, catastrophic failure. And yet, for a long time, it was like, you know, we're on a war against drugs, commercials, everything, war against drugs. Even worse, the war on terror. The war on terror. You know, we go to wars and wars, and we're on the war on terror. Be aware, permanently, forever, your airport experience will be the worst, crappiest thing in life because of the war on terror. War on terror, scare you. And that is demoralizing. It is exhausting. If we treat COVID this way, I do think we're going to run into trouble. I feel like we have to sort of try our best to make it more of structurally re-architecting how we live our lives in general.
Yeah.
For example, you know, we were all, and I'm including myself, I would find it so odd. Look at those pictures of all those people in Asian countries wearing masks out in public. What's up with them?
Yeah.
Well, guess what? I think masks out in public are kind of clever.
So, well, some people would wear masks at home because they wouldn't want to infect the people
right?
they live with. Yeah.
And I think that washing your hands is kind of smart.
Yeah.
And I think that maybe not having, you know, massive congregations all the time while there are bad flu or bad other things going around might be smart.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that it's going to become something like, well, I think we got to permanently change some of our patterns. But if we are always kind of, no, it's like we're still in full pandemic lockdown. It's all, and we're always feeling that way. I think none of us can fully handle that.
Well, I'm not exactly sure what you're saying, Berto, because on one hand, it's like I agree that it should just become a part of our culture and we should just do what we can. But I think what Anonymous Patron is talking about here is something that I can relate to, which, but I live in a pocket where something like 80% of people are vaccinated.
Yeah.
And there's been like zero deaths in the Seattle area recently, right?
I don't know, but yeah, that's great to hear.
Anyway, so, but I'm trying to imagine living in like central Washington or Spokane or, you know, one of those places where there's like 40% vaccination and the virus is still very much a problem. I wonder what I'd be doing. I think I would still be locking down and not going to restaurants or anything. But I'll tell you, I could absolutely imagine. I mean, the fatigue was getting bad anyway. But at the very least, I think one of the problem is with Anonymous Patron here from Canada is that Seattle was one of the very first places where the vaccination rate was so high that you could start venturing out into public and feel pretty safe.
Yeah.
And, but if I lived in another place, hearing about Seattle, hearing about other, you know, the United States, generally speaking, with all, then I think that would ruin it for me because, you know, back in January, no one had the vaccine.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, well, the entire world is, you know, on
same
average.
Boat.
Yeah. We're all screwed.
Yeah.
But to hear about other places, I could imagine if I lived in one of these places now, I could imagine myself just saying, you know what, like, I give up.
Yeah.
I can't live this way anymore. And if my community hasn't woke up now, it will never wake up. So I'm just going to start living my life again. And if I get sick, I get sick. Because what else can I do? I'm going to get the vaccine, you know, but I'm also just, I don't know if I can do it. So I get that feeling. I understand. I think what an honest patron is saying is just like,
I've been doing,
and especially with the PPE stuff in hospitals, I mean, it is elaborate and inconvenient.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I could see that. And again, all this would go away if everyone just got the vaccine. None of us would have to worry about this. There's enough to go around. Do you know what I mean? Especially in the next, you know, 6 months or so.
Yeah.
So,
now it's got to be getting that way, for example, in Colombia to friends and family that are there because there right now there's no end in sight.
Yeah.
And it's. Yeah.
Well, Berto, let's get off this topic.
All right.
And let's get to an even more serious topic.
Oh, God.
So, Allie on Discord, she's one of the Discord guardians, the mods on Discord. She has a very serious question just for you, Berto.
Ooh.
were Ross and Rachel on a break?
Awesome. A, yes. And B, there's two sides to the coin. Like, first of all, it was a break, but I think like both of them in their mind were hoping that the break would turn into a reunion. I think by one of the ways to kind of ensure that would happen would be to maybe not start going out with other people and doing things with other people. At the same time, when you're the one in the break, you don't really know. And you're also feeling hurt, whether the break is you or the other person or a little bit of both, you're still going to be feeling strong emotions. So I can totally understand why other relationships happened. And I can definitely understand why, you know, Ross would go down a certain path. And so I do think they were on a break. Yes, the break was real.
Dime on Discord says, why do we view sex as dirty? Why is it considered shameful? Berto, what do you think? This is kind of a good question.
It's very good, yeah. I don't think sex has been always viewed as dirty in every culture. Even today, it's not always viewed as dirty. There are certain things about sex that cause big taxes on human beings. Because when you have sex, especially historically, babies come out, and babies are a thing that you need to like keep track of and take care of. So as a result, culturally, turning sex into a bit of a big deal and a bit of a problem became in vogue going back thousands of years. And there are whole religions built around the idea of,
right,
of sexuality being, yeah, dirty.
Yeah, I learned this idea recently, and it all made sense to me, that similar to certain religious practices like kosher practices,
right,
they will hypothesize that it was developed because either they knew or they suspected that having certain cooking practices would actually result in infection or death or, yep, sickness. And they either saw it as a sign from God that you're not supposed to do that, or they knew that the people wouldn't follow the rule unless you made it the word of God.
Yep, yep, yep.
But whatever the case may be, they just codified it in biblical law and said, you cannot do these things. Circumcision, yep, you know, all these kinds of things. And getting back to the COVID thing, if I were to start my own religion and I could spread it around the world, I would
God
say,
God wants you to wear a mask.
God wants you to take your stupid vaccine.
Take your vaccine.
This is the blood of Christ that you are now taking into your own blood. You are, right, making yourself of God.
Yeah.
And then, you know, fast forward 2,000 years and people, they just don't think about it, you know, because it's just the right thing to do, right?
Yep.
And with sex, right, it's a similar thing that, and I'd never thought about it until someone was talking about this. Ironically, it might have been Jordan Peterson of all people. But at any rate, someone was talking about how in the past, sex could kill.
Yeah.
It could kill you because pregnancy was very dangerous.
Yeah.
You could get STIs. There could be jealous fighting among people that have, yeah, sex with other people. And so either they saw that as, you know, so there's, and I didn't hear this from whoever was lecturing on this. This is my idea. I don't know if I invented this or if I'm the only one who talks about this, but you have a society 3,000 years ago or even 150 years ago who observes what's happening, and they're like, huh, the people who consider sex to be between husband and wife, and they aren't really out there with their sexuality, they tend to do okay. They live longer, they stay together longer,
yep,
there's less fighting, there's more prosperity. Then we have these other people who just have sex with anyone.
Yep.
And there's more violence, there's more alcohol use, there's more chaos, there's less parenting involved. And instead of actually investigating those two worlds and saying, why are those things, they just, as a heuristic, say it must be related to sex. Even, right, though sex is the byproduct of the oppression and different systemic pressures that are economic pressures that are put on people probably. But anyway, they look to sexuality, and sex has something to do with it, because if you have sex with a lot of people, there's a greater chance you're going to get an STI, there's a greater chance of pregnancy, presumably. There's a greater chance of, well, actually, there isn't a greater chance of pregnancy. I guess there's a greater chance of pregnancy. You don't know who the father is.
I think there is a big factor of social stability as a community. Because, for example, I find it interesting that there's not a lot of effort spent. Like, there's no commandment against having sex with animals.
Yeah.
Whereas, I'm sure that sex with animals is very old.
Right.
But if you think about it, some dude in the hill having sex with a sheep, like, he might catch something, but it didn't really affect society as a whole.
Right.
Whereas a whole, like, problem where, like, the community's dissolving, there's infighting, there's a whole war, there's a thing, yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, you're observing this as a leader, as a religious leader. You're seeing this difference of chaos and death and violence, and on the other side, stability, and you're looking, okay, sexuality is at least a part of this. So I either believe that sexuality is the temptation of the devil, and when you live the life of the devil, then the devil ends up ruling your life and destroys you, and God abandons you. So therefore, if you want to be within God's graces, you have to apparently stop having sex. We didn't know that until we observed these two communities in opposite. Or the leader says, God doesn't care about sex, but we need this society to work better. And so I'm just going to decree that sex is evil and bad. Yeah.
And we know it's combinations of the two, because, for example, there were many cases where a king would have a law that, what do you call it? Out of wedlock. Gosh darn it.
Adultery?
Adultery, thank you. That adultery is not legal.
It's funny that he had a Freudian forget there.
Yes. That adultery is not legal. But the king was allowed to be adulterous.
Yeah.
And so, like, there were many cases where the law was useful, but they would make exceptions as needed.
or literally, the bishop would have decrees from God and then oppose them themselves. The other factor that's quite likely is sexism, that women are to be possessed and controlled, and women who are allowed, so to speak, to have sex with whoever they want is threatening to the patriarchy, and the patriarchy wants to keep women down, and so they're going to make sexuality in general evil, particularly in an effort to control women.
That can be too. It's funny because, like, masturbation has always been taboo, you know, and not always, not in every society, not like, and there's societies where sex was a lot more open and free and blah, blah, blah.
Still are, yeah.
Yeah.
And the third, I didn't read about this or hear this lectured, but I think that there could have been a heuristic around pleasure equaling bad things.
Definitely.
If again, you're a leader of a community and you see some people who toil in the fields all day long and they work hard to keep their home in order and things go well for them, they're miserable human beings, but there's no chaos. They are able to feed their family. There's another group of community where they don't work as much. They like to play games or to drink a lot and to sing songs. Well, the second society, taken to a certain extreme, is going to have a lot of chaos and a lot of famine and this sort of thing. And so this heuristic of doing things that are pleasurable leads to bad things. It leads to famine. It leads to death. It leads to chaos. And so regardless of the context, regardless of the nuance, regardless of case-by-case basis, we're just going to say pleasure equals death. And so as a community, we are going to have many, many cultural messages and values that are the foundation of the idea that pleasure is to be wrong.
Yeah,
we still kind of have that, you know, because people, when they watch television, they'll be like, I'm doing something wrong. And I'm always like, did you get your job done today? And they're like, well, do you mean, did I go to my job and work for 8 hours? Yeah, I went to my, okay. Are you neglecting your children? No, I don't have kids. Then what's the problem with watching TV? We still have that idea that doing something pleasurable for ourselves is somehow immoral.
I think the observation again would be that you definitely will not survive the harsh environment and the harsh reality of the universe if you dilly-dally. So, you know, the reality is, no, you got to get out in the field. You got to go out, hunt. Many of you will die, but we got to keep going. Otherwise, we're done. So if you're like, oh, you like enjoying the sunlight there, looking at the dandelions, get the hell up. You're 13 yeah. years old. You got to go.
Yeah. If you just enjoy anything, sex included, then it'll be your downfall.
That said, I will say that there is a overemphasis placed on sexuality being, you know, because many cultural traditions from the same religions have feasts, you know, feasts of great abundance, and food is a big part of it. And
but gluttony, Birdo.
Yeah. But there are moments where it's okay. And maybe the same can be said about sexuality. It's okay to get married and have sex.
But it's even dirty in the marriage.
To some cultures, not all.
Right, but yeah. we're talking about mainstream yeah. Western culture, which is yeah. that even sex between couples, married couples, it's considered dirty. You can't, like, the example I always give is, and I know some people don't really understand this analogy and they end up yelling at me about it, but go with me on this, is that you go to work and you have one coworker, you ask one coworker, what'd you do this weekend? Oh, I went on a hike. It was beautiful. We saw the mountains and the snow. We saw a bear. And
that's
it was
wonderful.
Yeah. And then you ask your other coworker, what'd you do? Oh, me and my wife, we tied each other up and we whipped each other and there was like different holes involved. And
that's beautiful.
And we
that's
had a great
so
time.
Nice. Yeah. That's great.
Both are self-indulgent activities that you're doing for pleasure.
Yep.
One is considered absolutely disgusting
and taboo
and something you should never speak out loud.
Certainly not at work. You'll get fired.
And even
for that.
If it was known, people look yeah. at you funny.
You will get fired.
But you
that.
Go hiking and it's glorious. Totally fine.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah. To me, I find that to be.
Actually, it's even better. What did you do this weekend? I watched a movie. Oh, yeah. What was the movie? Oh, it was so violent. Tons of, like, you know, people. There was sex, violence, blood, people dying left
or
and right.
I went hunting and I shot a deer.
Oh, I shot a deer.
And then I skinned it alive.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then what did you do?
Beautiful.
Oh, then the other, and even just tone it down. You asked the other coworker,
what did
you
do? I made love to my wife.
Yeah, we had sex for like, you know, an hour and a half. It was, oh man, orgasm was, out of this world.
You don't need to go, like, yeah. to your point. Literally, yeah. all you have to say is,
I just had sex with my wife.
I made love to my wife on. I mean, some of the more progressive people in the room might say, good for you.
Oh,
but
I can't.
And if it's at work,
yeah.
someone's going to complain.
Oh, yeah.
Like very inappropriate
yeah.
conversation.
So the counter argument to this, which undoubtedly people are already writing their emails, is I don't want to hear about other people's sexual life because it triggers me. And I would say, yes, if that's true for you, 100%. Why does it trigger you?
It would trigger me to hear about a deer being shot.
Certainly. And maybe some people wouldn't talk about it. But my response to that is that the reason why sexual discussions are triggering, one, is because of sexual traumas, obviously. But if you only hear about sexual acts when it's a precursor or a likely precursor to abuse, then you're always going to associate yeah. any discussion of sexuality or any acknowledgement of sexuality with abuse.
Right.
If our society was different yeah. and we talked about it like we went hiking, then even if you were sexually abused, you wouldn't be triggered by sexual discussions because you would hear it often.
Right. Like, think about, you know, people are going to get married. It's like, oh, where are you going to go for your honeymoon? Okay. So then they come back. How was the honeymoon? They'll talk about everything. Not once will they mention that they had sex.
Yeah. There might be jokes, but it'll be,
yeah,
you know.
I don't really want you to answer, and I'm just going to wink at you really quick, but like, oh, it must have been fun, huh? Wink. Yeah. We're done.
Yeah. We live in a completely just broken society when it comes to yeah. sexuality, and we wonder why bad things are
yeah.
happening.
Yeah.
All right, Birdo. Wow. This was a depressing episode.
Not the ending. I loved it.
I'm angry. I'm fired up.
I want to talk to you about my sex life.
All right. Well, that does it for that episode of Psychology in Seattle. Everyone out there, please take care of yourself and take care of others, because
you deserve it.